Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, Prime Minister's speaker clarifies Armenia's position on the Sunik route. Armenia to temporarily host Palestine's endangered cultural heritage at the Madena Taran. And the ICRC's final visit to Armenian detainees in Baku as office faces forced closure by Azerbaijan. Tune into our weekly roundup of the news with me, Maria Titizian, and Rubina Margosyan.
As discussions continue over the Sunik route, the road that would connect Azerbaijan to Nakhichevan to Armenia under U.S. supervision, Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan's spokesperson Nazali Baghdasaryan has once again clarified Armenia's position. In the past 3 weeks, Armenian officials have made several conflicting statements. Some said Armenia has rejected leasing the road to the U.S., others questioned whether such a deal aligns with Armenian law, while some claimed the offer hasn't even been discussed. Baghdasaryan said the confusion partly stems from the complexity of the issue and the terminology involved. Terms like leasing, right to develop, or outsourcing can mean different things depending on the context, she noted. She reiterated that Armenia has never discussed, is not discussing, and will not discuss any transport arrangement that would compromise the country's territorial integrity, sovereignty, or jurisdiction. At the same time, she said Armenia is open to discussing various formulas for regional transport routes as long as they remain within those core principles and is interested in reaching agreements on the issues. Baghdasaryan added that while sovereignty cannot be outsourced, business management of infrastructure like railways, pipelines, or power lines can be. In fact, the maintenance of roads in Armenia has long been handled by private companies. The only real question, she said, is the quality of that management, which is unrelated to the current debate. Meanwhile, Deputy Speaker of Parliament and Armenia's Special Envoy to normalization talks with Turkey, Ruben Rubinyan, reminded this week that a special unit has been established within the National Security Service and is tasked with exercising enhanced control over transit routes passing through Armenian territory. The unit was established back in 2023.
This week, Armenia's Deputy Foreign Minister Vahan Gostanyan took part in a high-level international conference at the UN headquarters in New York on resolving the Palestinian issue and advancing the two-state solution. In his remarks, Gostanyan reiterated Armenia's firm belief in a two-state solution, one in which all enjoy the benefits of peaceful coexistence. Guided by this conviction, in June 2024, Armenia recognized the state of Palestine, and later, under the auspices of the 79th session of the UNGA, established diplomatic relations. Kostanyan welcomed the announcement of the President of France and the recent statement by the UK on their intention to recognize Palestine. He said, "We are also particularly proud that the foreign ministers of France and Palestine had a chance to meet in Armenia in the margins of the Yerevan Dialogue Diplomatic Forum, paving the way for this historic development," he said. Kostanyan also said that Armenia and Palestine have reached an agreement under which Palestine's endangered cultural heritage will be temporarily housed at the Madena Taran, the Mesrop Mashdots Institute of Ancient Manuscripts.
And representatives of the International Committee of the Red Cross will soon no longer be able to visit Armenian detainees in Baku as the ICRC office there is set to close. And we've been talking about this for a while. We knew this was happening, Maria, but we didn't know exactly when. ICRC has been the sole independent international organization able to visit imprisoned Armenians, monitor their conditions, address health concerns, deliver essential clothing and hygiene supplies, and facilitate video calls with relatives. According to Zara Amatuni, the head of communications at ICRC Armenia, the last visit to Armenian detainees took place back in June, with no visits conducted since then. Amatuni added that dialogue with Azerbaijani authorities continues in hopes of restoring access, but there is currently no clarity on either the format or even the possibility of future visits.
In local news, the interim manager of the electric networks of Armenia, Romanos Petrosyan, canceled a number of procurement processes with a combined estimated value of over 3 billion Armenian dirham. This is approximately 7.8 million US dollars. According to a statement issued by the company, the decision was prompted by systemic issues identified in the procurement procedures. The cancelled tenders had been intended for the acquisition of electrotechnical equipment, meters, cables, and various services under ENA's investment program. Bedrosyan cited discriminatory technical specifications, non-inclusive, non-transparent procedures, and a lack of objectivity in preliminary pricing as key factors behind the decision. Efforts are now underway to revise and remove the company's procurement framework. According to Bedrosyan's directive, procurement processes will resume only once the updated procedures are in place. And just as a reminder, Bedrosyan was appointed to lead the ENA after Samvel Karabedyan, the owner, was imprisoned for calling for a coup and whatnot.
And we're in the process of nationalizing the electrical networks. And speaking of Samvel Karapetyan, the majority shareholder of the electrical networks of Armenia, he is set to lead his newly formed political force. This is according to his nephew, Narek Karapetyan, who said the team would move forward under Karapetyan's direction across all key areas, economic, social, and foreign policy. Narek Karapetyan also emphasized the importance of professional leadership rather than individuals clinging to power despite failures, a factor he identified as central to the country's reoccurring political crisis. However, Narek Karapetyan did not specify whether the Russian-based businessman would be their candidate for prime minister. According to Armenia's constitution, a person must have held only Armenian citizenship and have permanently resided in Armenia for the past 4 years to be eligible for the prime ministership. While Karapetyan holds Armenian citizenship, he does not meet these requirements. His permanent place of residence is in Russia, and he holds both Armenian and Russian citizenship. And in related news, Justice Minister Sirpuhi Galyan stated this week that if the electrical network of Armenia is nationalized, Karapetyan will receive compensation, as such processes can only be carried out legally with restitution.
In the weeks following his arrest, Karapetyan launched defamation lawsuits against civil contract. This is the ruling party. Members Arsen Torosyan and Hayk Gonjorian. A court froze Torosyan's assets worth about $23,000, the exact amount Samvel Karapetyan is seeking in damages. The court declined to impose similar measures on Gonjorian, citing insufficient evidence. Civil contract MPs had accused Karapetyan of collaborating with Russian intelligence services and orchestrating conspiracies against the Armenian state, among other allegations.
And amid efforts by the state to reclaim ownership of the Yerevan Circus building, also tied to Karapetyan, Tashir Group announced this week that reconstruction of the venue is nearly complete. The circus is set to reopen under a new name, Tashir Arena. More than 150 international artists, directors, and producers have joined the project, arriving in Armenia on July 30 to finalize preparations for the grand opening. This is a very interesting story. The Yerevan Circus was privatized 20 years ago through a government decision. It was acquired by the Yerevan Circus Company, the majority of which is owned by Tashir Capital and headed by Karapetyan's nephew. After limited initial investment, it was discovered that the building was not earthquake safe. This is about the original building. The structure was demolished in 2012 and the construction of new facility began. The reopening was first scheduled for 2015, then 2021. And later 2023. There were no talks whatsoever about opening that building. That building has been there.
Yeah, it's been standing there empty
for decades now. But all of a sudden, in a week, there's going to be a circus. Well, earlier in July, the State Property Management Committee filed a lawsuit arguing that the company had not met its obligations and that the property should be returned to the state. According to the committee, while 6 billion dirhams, this is about $15 million, had been invested, key commitments such as creating jobs, completing construction, and launching circus activities were not fulfilled. And how can we live without
a
circus?
No, but can I just say something? I know this is completely unrelated to the news. I just don't understand why we need a circus.
I know that's like, where
seriously, isn't it like is it a Soviet thing that I'm not
registering? All capitals I think had circuses buildings dedicated to circuses,
but the like them still.
I'm world just... has changed and we definitely do not need a building dedicated to the circus, but also we do not need buildings that are just standing there incomplete
for decades.
Yeah. And we have several
the next story is about that, and it's really interesting because all of these purchases go back about 20 years to the Kocharyan era, where a lot of these buildings were, I mean, it happened in the Derbedrosyan era as well, not to, you know, I don't want anybody to think we're politicizing anything, but facts state stand for themselves, that a lot of these buildings were, I don't know for how much, bought by these people, and many of them remained empty.
We have the same problem with more historical buildings that we're doing a series on, where it's a historically beautiful building. It's just
in the
left
middle of downtown Yerevan,
For forever.
Or ones that are crumbling that should be preserved, right? Well, in an ongoing legal dispute involving another Russian-Armenian businessman, Ara Abrahamyan, the anti-corruption court this week ordered the return of a 3,000 square meter undeveloped land plot behind the Children's World, otherwise known as Zoom or Zetsky Mir.
Children's World.
Okay. Building to the Yerevan municipality. In recent years, Armenian authorities have filed three separate lawsuits to reclaim ownership of the site, one of Yerevan's most prominent commercial properties. And for those that don't know, it's on Apovian and Arami Street, the corner. And I remember when I moved to Armenia, in 2001, Zoom, it was still open.
Certain sections, and it were still...
It was like a flea market, right? I just remember it being gray and gross and dirty. And then they started...
I thought it was beautiful. Okay, I liked going it. It looked like a palace
to me. You saw
it
as a kid, right? But then they started renovating it from the outside. And so since then, the building has remained empty.
I mean, but we're not talking about the building.
No, I know.
In
we're talking about the
here.
Plot behind the building. But just so as a point of reference for our listeners... According to the prosecutor's office, the land behind this building had been allocated for construction purposes, but had not been developed for over 3 years, which violates the terms of its allocation. The building and adjacent territory were transferred to a company called Soglasi Armenia, a company owned by Abrahamyan's family, nearly two decades ago. Again, we can trace this all back to about 20 years ago. Soglasi Armenia announced plans to appeal the court ruling, describing it as an arbitrary act of dispossession. In a statement, the company claimed that the ruling was politically motivated and linked to Abrahamyan's criticism of Armenian authorities. It also argued that construction work has been ongoing and blamed administrative bodies for delays and obstacles encountered over the years. Speaking to Russia's TASS news agency, Abrahamyan called the seizure of his property politically motivated, as we just said. The president of the Union of Armenians of Russia said he had acquired the land as a foreign investor through a government auction 20 years ago, in full compliance with Armenian law. He claimed that by declaring the privatization of the land illegal, the anti-corruption court, which he described as a body created specifically for political purposes, had demonstrated itself to be a tool of Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan, used to target those critical of the government's policies and alleged indifference toward Armenia and its people. But it's interesting that when they are working outside the confines of the law, this is fine.
Well, remember, Maria, we walked in there looking for a venue for
our
festival. Media festival the first year. This was back in 2021. And everything that we looked up, researched, trying to find people to maybe even rent the space for
as
a couple
is.
As is for a couple of days. And we're talking about the actual building that exists. Mm-hmm. And we were told that by the end of the year, the construction will be finished and the building will be
2025
Well, more of similar news. The brother of former Prime Minister Hovik Abrahamyan has repaid damages equivalent to $195,000 to the state, according to the Office of the Prosecutor General. The charges were initiated in December of 2024 after the State Revenue Committee reported that a fish farm in the Ararat region owned by Abrahamyan was suspected of large-scale tax evasion. The investigation revealed that Abrahamyan, together with the director and the chief accountant of the company, concealed taxable assets and submitted falsified tax data to avoid paying taxes to the state budget. Meanwhile, the Anti-Corruption Committee announced that it has completed the preliminary investigation into Hovik Abrahamyan's case, who is accused of laundering 470 million drams, this is $1.2 million, and unlawfully engaging in entrepreneurship while he was in office. Abrahamyan faces charges of abuse of power and illegal involvement in business activities, as I said, and during the investigation, assets belonging to Abrahamyan and individuals linked to him were placed under seizure.
And this week, Police Major Aram Navasartyan, the driver of a vehicle in the Prime Minister's convoy that struck and killed 28-year-old Sonam Anatsaganyan, who was pregnant with her first child at the time while she was crossing the road 3 years ago, was found guilty by the courts. His sentence will be announced during the next phase of the proceedings.
We talked a lot about this news item. Azerbaijan demolished the monument to the Armenian marine artist Hovhannes Ayvazovsky that had been installed in Stepanakert. This was back in 2021 with the participation of Russian peacekeepers, and the statue was made by a Russian sculptor. The monument's destruction drew concerns in Russia. The Russian President's Special Representative for International Cultural Cooperation criticized the move, calling it a violation of principles of allied relations between two countries. Commenting on Russia's response to the matter, the Azerbaijani Foreign Ministry stated that the bust of a painter of Armenian origins, Hovhannes Ayvazovsky, had been illegally installed on Azerbaijani territory by Russian peacekeepers without Baku's permission. According to the MFA, this constituted a clear sign of Russian disregard for Azerbaijan's sovereignty.
Over a statue. And this goes back to 2021.
Yes.
Before the fall of Artsakh.
Plus, Azerbaijan criticized the Russian state news agency TASS for saying Stepanakert in their communication instead of Khangendi, as Azerbaijan calls Stepanakert. And
Well, they called it an act of disrespect and an insult to Azerbaijan's territorial integrity.
And we were talking about this. This is very interesting because when Russia started the war with Ukraine, Ayvazovsky was politicized as well because he lived in Crimea for most of his life, even though he traveled a lot of the time. And one of the acts by Ukraine was to reclaim all their artists.
And Ayvazovsky was among
one of them. And then basically they called to major, they wrote and petitioned major museums in the world to change his name into Ukrainian artist. And then Armenia said, if you're setting things right, set things right. He was never Ukrainian or Russian. He was originally Armenian. This is not disputed. He just lived in Russia. And now Russia and Azerbaijan are...
Are going at it. The absurdity of our region almost, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. A very interesting way from interesting perspectives, like a painter.
Yeah, indeed. Well, speaking of Azerbaijan, a Munich court, this is a striking development, actually. A Munich court sentenced former German Bundestag member Edward Lindner to 9 months of suspended imprisonment for accepting bribes from Azerbaijan, I was about to say Russia, from Azerbaijan, and using those funds to influence members of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, otherwise known as PACE. Investigators found that between 2010 and 2016, Lindner received around 4 million euros through 19 shell companies to promote Azerbaijani interests and vote according to Baku's instructions. During the trial, Lindner fully admitted both the act and the intent behind it. The court also ordered the seizure of about 111,000 euros from the heirs of Karin Strenz, who was implicated in similar offenses related to accepting funds from Azerbaijan and working to advance its agenda in PACE. Key evidence included decrypted social media messages, one of which showed Strands promising a coordinated vote and ending the message with a euro symbol, like you pay me and I'll do what you want. The court noted that Lindner's sentence may be suspended since this was his first conviction and he's not expected to reoffend. I don't know, maybe. He was also placed on a two-year probation and ordered to pay 10,000 euros to a victim support fund, although he received 4 million euros.
Well, he's not expected to reoffend because he's no longer in the Bundestag. And a little bit about something that we experienced in Armenia, but it ended well, I think.
For now.
Armenia's national ARCA payment system experienced several outages this week. Core functionality was restored, though issues persisted with mobile banking apps and card-to-card transfers. Although officials say the disruption occurred during a scheduled technical upgrades and improvements, it highlights ongoing reliability concerns for Armenia's electronic payment infrastructure. Officials made reassurances that it was not the result of a cyber attack and personal data was not compromised.
Yeah, but it was very annoying because You know, my daughter called, said, I can't use the tech because I don't have cash. I need gas, I think it was. She goes, do you have cash stashed anywhere? She was at my house.
And the day before, you didn't have electricity and she couldn't take her car out of the garage.
And then this morning, after the horrendous, horrible night of heat, I woke up and we had no water. So it's just been, you know, not a pleasant time. Infrastructure issues persist. Anyway, as always, we talk about the articles that we published this week, and we finished publishing our July issue of Salt, our lifestyle magazine. And we have a fantastic photo story by Arek Balayan. It's called The Magical Circle in a Small Town Under a Striped Tent. And this is about a traveling circus. Here we go with the circus.
Under a tent, which doesn't need a whole permanent building,
right? So it was a childhood dream of his to live with a traveling circus. And this sort of reignited his passion. And he came to you, I think, Ruben. He said, I want to, you know, take photos of these circus performers. And through his daughter's wonder and the performer's dedication, he gets a glimpse of the magic, trust and love that make the circus a timeless enchantment.
Another photo story very close to my heart.
Okay.
Dry People Wanted, Vartavar in Yerevan. It's by Ani Gevorkian.
Yeah, we hate to be like a wet rag, but both of us don't like this holiday.
We don't. After a while, I stopped liking it. So yeah,
I used to like it too.
I locked myself in, as I've done in several years now. Well, she has a nice perspective. She kind of dissects Vartavar. And it's a story about how it starts with children in the morning and then how the grown-ups join and then how it basically, these are my words, not hers, and it's a photo story, it becomes vicious. Where
little microaggressions throughout the day. So if you do want to check out Salt, it's on the front page of our website, and you can check out all of the articles. But we did move on to what we are sort of our bread and butter, if you will. One of them is called Tech Diplomacy, Reshaping Global Power Dynamics. And this is about... you know, Denmark created the first tech diplomat, and it sort of began to highlight how tech giants could possibly be reshaping global power dynamics. And so she looks at Armenia's sort of quiet innovation strategy and explores how tech diplomacy is becoming a transformative trend.
There's no talk about Elon Musk in it, just in case. It's a disclaimer. It's actually how diplomacy is moving closer to tech in general. And Aliyev's Endgame, Holding Peace Hostage, is a piece by Datevik Hayrapetyan. She basically, again, takes a look at what Aliyev has done and summarizes beautifully, has done and is continuously doing, and how this ties up to what we, a lot of us, suspect and know, that he never intends, he doesn't intend to sign the peace treaty.
Yep. A piece by Karina Avedisyan, she's our copy editor, but she's also, you know, our resident activist, I would say. She wrote a piece called New Coalitions for a Dying World. And, you know, she writes that after the fall of Artsakh, we were sort of in a state of paralysis and we didn't know really how to move forward. And at the same time, the assault on Gaza and the ongoing genocide that's taking place in Gaza, sort of shifted everything. And she calls on Armenians to reject isolationism and build solidarity, not only with Palestinians, but other oppressed peoples facing state violence, colonialism, and global impunity. So it has a lot of interactions, for sure, at this point.
Yes, and another similar article, but yet from this regionally... Mm-hmm. Neighboring article, Syria's Disintegration by Tigran Yegavian, and he's basically taking a look at what's happening to minorities in today's Syria, and saying that the Armenian minority is no exception, and the future does not look very safe.
No, it doesn't, and it's actually, you know, you read it with a lot of, it's very sobering. The whole region seems to be up in fire, doesn't it? Anyway, so that's... Those are the stories we publish, and that's the kind of week we had here in Armenia. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. We will be taking a break next week amidst the heat and our exhaustion in general. So we will not be having a news podcast, but we will be sharing some of our pieces that we love and that we think you should have a chance to take a look at. So check out our social media platforms. And we'll be seeing you soon.